evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering tonight, Monday, December 22nd, 2014. The South Sudan peace talks collapse again in Addis Ababa. This time, the government is blaming the rebels for blocking peace.
This is why we have created the position of a prime minister. This is why we have decided, we have agreed to create more positions so that we accommodate those who want power, so that we accommodate them, because the objective of the government is not positions, but peace.
And the SPLA welcomes a new report that accuses rebels loyal to Riek Machar of committing human rights violations in Bantu.
And we will welcome the investigation that will be composed of SPLA members of international community that are actors in the conflict in South Sudan. So we have to constitute investigation teams.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan peace talks in the Ethiopian capital have collapsed. There is no word from Addis on what caused the breakdown this time around, but South Sudan Information Minister blames the rebels of the SPLM in opposition for putting forward new demands at the negotiations. Michael Makui says his government is willing to accommodate the rebels' demands for the sake of peace.
The mediators have decided to adjourn this session so that they conduct further consultations on some of the issues that erupted in this last session. When we started, we went on very well. We agreed on the number of the ministries. We constitute the executive of the transitional government of national unity. We agreed on 27 ministries and 7 deputy ministers. Yesterday, when we sat in order to agree on the draft, the rebels reneged completely from all that we had agreed in Bahardar, and they insisted they only follow the resolutions of their conference in Pagak.
I also had a chance to speak to one of the members of the delegation of the SPLM in opposition at the negotiations, and he was saying something different. He said that your delegation backtracked on all the things you had earlier agreed on. What is your reaction to that?
Well, of course, that is unfounded. You can even check counter-check it through the other sources. You can check the former detainees, find out what is it. You can also check even on the mediators.
For how long is this going to continue? Because you have been talking to each other for almost a year.
Yes, we can continue to talk for a year. We can even continue to talk for more. But the main objective is to get a peace, a reliable peace, a durable peace that will not take us back to war. This is the main objective.
Let's just pick it up from there. Your government is looking at getting a durable, sustainable peace process for the people of South Sudan. But this is happening at the expense of people who are suffering. The humanitarian condition is said to be dire. They are saying next year your country is going to face starvation.
It is not the government which is obstructing the peace. It is not the government which is delaying the process. The government had ever been out to reach an agreement within the shortest possible period. However, there is no way the government can reach peace alone without the other party. So the problem is not with the government of South Sudan. But the problem is the rebels who keep fluctuating on and off every now and then, setting back the record at a time when we move ahead, then they would set it back and so forth.
And the rebels are also pointing fingers at you, saying that Juba is the obstacle to peace, because they are saying...
I said you can counter-check the report.
Do you agree with people in the region who are saying these negotiations has become a blame game than talking peace?
That is their opinion, of course. But for me, it is not a blame game. We are trying our level best to reach peace. By the way, those who are not on the ground should not pass judgments on issues which they don't understand.
The root cause of this conflict is in power struggle. Do you think it is easier to solve issues of power within that short time when two principals are all fighting for power?
It is not difficult as long as we have. This is why we have created the position of a prime minister. This is why we have decided, we have agreed to create more positions so that we accommodate those who want power, so that we accommodate them, because the objective of the government is not positions, but peace. So we are ready to buy peace at any expense.
So you are saying peace will come by accommodating the rebels?
Yeah, definitely. The main objective of the rebels is accommodation. So if it is accommodation versus peace, then we will give them, we accommodate them so that we bring peace to the people of South Sudan.
But is that sustainable? What if there is a reshuffle? If you form a government today and reshuffle in after 3 months, the same people whom we are accommodating will get annoyed and go back to resort to other means.
Well, that is not the case. It is not everybody who is out for that, but these are certain individuals, and if these individuals, if their objective is to be in whatever, then we are ready to accommodate them until we go for election.
That's South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei speaking to me this past hour from Juba. South Sudan Army is welcoming a report released last week by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, accusing rebel forces allied to former Vice President Riek Machar of committing human rights violations in Bantu. The report blames rebel fighters of targeted ethnic killings, abductions and rape in Bantu last October. SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer welcomes the report but says the army should be involved in future investigations. UNMISS report details what it calls gross abuses of human rights and serious violation of international humanitarian laws committed by opposition forces when they attacked Bantu on October 29 last year and retook control of the town from government forces. Joseph Contreras is the spokesman for UNMISS. He says the human rights monitors visited Bantu several times since the rebel attack to gather information for the report.
On the 30th of October, human rights officers observed 3 individual graves and 3 unburied bodies. The bodies were in civilian clothing, and one body had characteristics consistent with the description of a victim given by several witnesses. On that day, people were at the scene burying bodies. When human rights officers returned on the 20th of November of this year, an additional individual grave was observed, as well as 3 unburied bodies.
SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer welcomed the report. He says investigations like the one carried by UNMISS are important and provide basis for justice to take its course.
We are open for investigation. If SPLA unit is accused, we are ready to investigate into the report, and we will welcome the investigation that will be composed of SPLA members of international community that are actors in the conflict in South Sudan. So we have to constitute investigation teams if we are to achieve justice in South Sudan.
Aguer says the army is in the process of prosecuting soldiers who are found guilty of committing atrocities during the conflict.
Yeah, there was about three soldiers that have been, one of them being sentenced to death by fire. A squad, two are to compensate, to pay blood compensation to the families of those victims that were killed. So this is in regard to the killing or murder charges. The other offenses have been approved, and that is dismissal of those who committed those offenses. About 40 SPLA soldiers have been dismissed. This all is a process of military justice to achieve professionalism and disciplines within the army.
Richard K. Muller is the chairman of the opposition's Justice and Human Rights Committee. He says the rebels are also committed to bringing human rights violators in their ranks to justice. He also says he has doubts about the accusations in the UNMISS report.
Those are allegations without proof. If they can prove it, I don't think so. We want to establish court system, and we want to hold everybody who committed crimes against humanity or any other crime accountable.
Unity State has been the scene of heavy fighting since South Sudan plunged into violence on December 15 last year. Bantu, the capital, has changed hands several times between government and rebel forces. That report was prepared by Mungume Davis Rakarinj in Juba and Lucy Pony in Washington. Hundreds of residents of Jonglei State took part today in a walk for peace organized by the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO. The event is aimed at promoting peace and stability in the state and was welcomed by civil society groups and the authorities in Bor County. Michael Atit has this story from Washington.
Keris John Kenyi is an advocacy and lobbying officer for CEPO. He says CEPO wants to get the message across that communities need to be part of South Sudan's peace process.
What we are doing to empower community demand for peace and stability. It's also empowering community to influence and demand peace and stability from their leaders and representatives in their government. Our main goal is to contribute in enhancing community participation and involvement in peace.
Acting Bor County Commissioner Makol Ayuen says the people in his county are very much committed to peace. He thinks CEPO is helping to nurture that commitment.
You have come for a very important campaign. We are for peace, and we are the loving peace people, and we always support peace.
Bor has been the scene for fierce battles in the year-old conflict in South Sudan, but the town and the county have been relatively peaceful for the last few months. Awur Azaya Biar chairs the Bor County Women's Association. She says, if the different ethnic groups in Jonglei State can build good relations, peace and development will follow.
Peace begins at home, between family and child, wife and husband. Then it is extended to the neighbors. If we have good relations between Nuer and Murlei, peace will come. And we need peace for development.
Welo Ochala Oman is a civil society representative. He says the South Sudanese have to forgive each other for past wrong if there is to be peace in the country. He also says there should be no more delays to the peace process in Addis Ababa, which nearly a year after it began, it is still not produced a lasting peace deal.
Peace will come when we are committed, when we show up, when we express our feelings, when we forgive one another, when we reconcile with another person, with other people, neighbors. Peace needs to be sent immediately. Both sides, government and opposition, our people are suffering. No good health, no education, food insecurity become rampant, highest rate in the country. So that when the peace sign, definitely people will stay in peace.
During the march, boxes were provided for anyone who has an opinion about the fighting in South Sudan and efforts to end it, to write down their feelings and suggestions and place them inside. Meding James Lual says he put a note in the box to say, quote, peace in Addis Ababa may not be anything to people of Jonglei State because what will be discussed at the Ethiopian peace talks will be in the interests of politicians and not in the interests of people at the grassroots level. End quote. James Garang also dropped a note in the box to say that South Sudan needs peace and an interim government, but in his opinion, it should not include opposition leader Riek Machar. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit.
And that story was prepared by Jacob Achiek in Bor. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a look back at how this past year of violence has affected journalists and their ability to do their jobs. Stay tuned.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you have any resolutions for the coming year?
I want to be enrolled back to school and then do so many stuff like organizing programs and then making revenue out of it.
I'll talk less, more of action, stop procrastinating, I'll be proactive.
Yeah, exactly. I have my resolution this coming year. I want to overcome all my weaknesses after I have realized all of them so that I should turn it into strength.
Yeah, I do have, like, next year I want it to be perfect. Everything I do, I want to be to accomplish everything I want to do.
I will open a shop as a student, what I would run business there and also engage myself in catering activities with also doing medical. That's sort of one of my resolutions for next year.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The violence in South Sudan is now in its second year. Thousands are suffering, including journalists. The East African representative of the Committee to Protect Journalists, or CPJ, spoke with VOA fellow Nabil Biagio about the past year of violence in South Sudan and how it has affected the media.
The CPJ's East Africa representative, Tom Rhodes, says press freedom has deteriorated significantly since South Sudan plunged into violence in December last year. Since fighting broke out, officials have warned journalists to only report the government version of events surrounding the conflict between its troops and rebels allied to former Vice President Riek Machar. And the army says it wants to vet everything journalists write about the conflict.
Before, when there was a small window of opportunity to criticize the government and to conduct investigative journalism, now that window is completely closed and self-censorship is the order of the day.
Rhodes visited South Sudan in September and October, and he spoke to journalists, lawyers, government officials and UN staff. He says the environment in South Sudan is more hostile for journalists than it was in the old days when southern Sudanese were fighting a civil war against the regime in Khartoum.
Even during that time, journalists were allowed to at least get both sides of the story in their reporting. I mean, this has shown a kind of a complete disregard for the basics of ethics of journalism, where you can only report one side of the story.
In September, the government of South Sudan announced that three media bills had been signed into law by President Salva Kiir. The new laws are a first for South Sudan. The country has never had media laws before. But Roth says they are mere ink on paper. They have not been implemented, and journalists continue to be harassed for publishing or broadcasting the views of the rebels in South Sudan.
The media bills have been a great disappointment for many journalists on the ground. There was some hope that instead of journalists being arbitrarily arrested or even beaten, they could contend with media disputes through the regulator.
Rhodes says he's frustrated by the lack of media freedom in South Sudan. He says without the political will on the part of the government to follow the laws they have written and signed, there is very little anyone can do.
We do a lot of complaining and doesn't really have any effect. I mean, of course we are in consultation with individuals within the government and we are working with civil society to try and push for the implementation of these laws. But it's really difficult to know what else to do at this point. It only hopes that that the authorities will have the wherewithal to genuinely place a political will behind these laws instead of just simply announcing their signature.
Scores of journalists fled South Sudan when the fighting broke out, many of them to neighboring Uganda and Kenya. Several are in hiding to avoid government punishment for their reporting. Roth says the crackdown on journalists is not showing any sign of letting up. He says the number of exiled journalists from South Sudan will continue to increase until there is a genuine effort by the two warring parties to make peace. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
Still on issues of media, the Association for Media Development in South Sudan last week called together journalists and security personnel to talk about the challenges facing the country's media. Both sides are optimistic that dialogue would help journalists understand their rights as well as the restrictions they face. But as Philip Thornaleu learned at the meeting in Juba, deep mistrust still exists between reporters and security agents.
Alfred Taban, the chairperson of the Association of Media Development in South Sudan, says newspapers have been confiscated, radio station signal blocked, and journalists arrested for covering what security officials deem sensitive or threatening national security. Taban says the two-day workshop is aimed at bridging the gap between journalists and security agents' understanding of what is legal and illegal reporting.
Whenever people talk and discuss issues, they always find solutions. And this is what is being done in this workshop. You know, people are talking about difficulties and solutions, how to overcome this problem. There's nothing in this country that can come overnight, so I think it will be gradual.
Taban says security officers have been aggressive toward the media and hopes this dialogue will curve that trend. 27 journalists from various media outlets and 28 members of military, police and national security are attending the workshop. Brigadier General Malang Ayuen, director of the SPLA Military Information, says security officers are concerned about how reporters conduct their work. He says security officials think reporters should cross-check information with them before publishing or broadcasting the material to ensure it is accurate. Ayuen says those concerns have been addressed through talking to directors of South Sudan's media outlets. He acknowledges that some security officers have acted outside the law.
I would not say that actually the problem is institution versus institution, but it's a personal mistake sometimes because of ignorance, because of lack of capacity, lack of training, lack of knowledge, personal interests, call it misuse of positions and powers.
Ayuen says having the media and security officers talking face to face about how to do their respective jobs professionally and in accordance with the law is a worthwhile endeavor. Charles Bain, a social consultant and a lecturer at the University of Juba, says bringing security officials and reporters together is just the first step. He says journalists should not have to compromise their work to get better treatment from security agents. But he hopes the dialogue will pave the way toward better communication.
This workshop will enhance the relationship and will also identify some of the crucial issues that have been keeping them apart. And will bring them to dialogue and to see and to narrow that gap. So by doing that, even if it means there will be some still harassment here and there, but it will not be much.
The roundtable talks, sponsored by Norwegian People Aid, have been conducted since 2011. The forum aims to harmonize the working environment for journalists in South Sudan. Media advocacy groups say journalists continue to be harassed and arbitrarily arrested. Security agents defend the actions in the name of protecting the public from the potential harm caused by unverified or false information. Since the fighting began 12 months ago, a number of reporters have been arrested and radio stations and newspapers closed. Despite any progress made at this workshop, no formal documents will be devolved that spell out specific terms about how the media and security agents will interact in the future. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
You are still listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with VOA fellow Lucy Pony.
Thanks, John. An explosion at a bus station in Nigeria has killed at least 15 people. Local officials say the bomb wounded another 21 people at the bus station in Gombe City. A car bomb killed 10 people in late October at a bus stop in the same city. No one has claimed responsibility for today's attack, which took place in northeastern Nigeria. That is where the Islamist extremist group Boko Haram has repeatedly staged attacks on civilians in its efforts to carve out an Islamic state. And Tunisia has elected veteran politician Beji Caid Essebsi in its first free presidential elections since independence from France in 1956. The Independent Higher Authority for Elections announced today that the 88-year-old former minister who heads the Nida Tunes, or Tunisia's Call Party, will replace incumbent Monsef Marzrouki after winning 56% of the vote. Mr. Masruki had served as interim president since the so-called Arab Spring revolution began in 2011. Mr. Esebsi was widely seen as the favorite after last month's first round of voting. And finally, China's foreign ministry says it does not have enough information to determine whether reports that North Korea used Chinese facilities to stage a cyber attack on Sony Pictures are true. Foreign ministry spokesman Hua Chuying said today China is opposed to all forms of cyber attacks and would not reach any conclusions without having enough facts. However, Hua said China is opposed to attacks on a third party through making use of the facilities of another country and is ready to have a dialogue with other countries. The United States is in talks with China to possibly help block cyber attacks from Pyongyang. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Lucy Pony.
For the first time in South Sudan's brief history, the Chamber of Commerce is handing out awards to recognize homegrown businesses for outstanding service. The Chamber of Commerce hopes the awards will promote a competitive spirit and encourage companies to comply with government regulations. Mungume Debs Rwakarin sent us this report from Juba.
The aim of the Chamber Quality Awards is to promote a culture of excellence among South Sudanese businesses.
The emphasis was that they want to promote the quality services. They want to encourage companies to be compliant to the standards that the Bureau of South Sudanese Standards were promoting. They want also to encourage the private sector to employ more people.
That is Aja Kwol, the deputy chairwoman of the Chamber of Commerce Committee that organized the awards. Kwol says companies that employ South Sudanese nationals were rewarded for creating employment opportunities. Others were rewarded for everything from paying taxes to the national treasury to being innovative or having a proper waste management plan. Ali Mairi is the CEO of Crown Hotel, which was recognized as the best hotel in South Sudan.
This is for me, is the thing, very big thing in my life, because when the people come to you to talk about you are good, this is don't have a price. This is something very, very big. They give us power to make it something better for next year.
New Sudan Insurance won the award for Best Insurance Company. The company's Corporate Affairs Director, Justin Wani Koji, says the award
motivates us to do better, and even it will attract the public to come and insure with us, because that's a sign of confidence and a guarantee.
Cole says that is exactly the reason why the Chamber of Commerce organized the awards.
The award is promoting the best services. So it's good because that is going to encourage companies to actually give the best services to the community. And the actual people who are going to benefit from this are the community, because they will have the better services now.
Companies competed in 27 categories, ranging from transportation to public relations, pharmaceuticals, construction, and best woman entrepreneur of the year. The winner of that last category was Rose Peter Juma, who created and runs the popular Mama Zahara restaurant. The Chamber of Commerce expects to give out more rewards next year. For VOA News, I am Mugume Debs Ruakarinj in Juba.
That report by Mungume Debs Ruakarinj brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song City of Loss by Eddie Kenzo. We have been listening to Eddie Kenzo with the song City of Loss. I'm John Tanza in Washington. It's good to be back here in Studio 13. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
kamuziki zuri sana.